This week marked 6 months since the CDC confirmed the first case of COVID-19 in the U.S. Now, there have been more than 4 million. And while we know a lot more today about the virus than we did then, there is still a lot we don't know. So let's get answers to some of our questions from Dr. Tom Inglesby, director of the Center for Health Security of the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Dr. Inglesby, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, just big picture, as you look at the situation right now and the places where we're seeing new spikes in cases, how bad do you think this pandemic is going to get in the U.S.? And are we still going to be dealing with this virus in a major way into next year?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, we are in a bad place with this pandemic in the U.S. It's pretty clear that in the last month in particular, things have really moved in the wrong direction in many states around the country. And we're going to be dealing with this virus for quite some time. And so we do have to find a way to live with it and to better control it. And right now, we're not doing a very good job of that.
Well, what would you say is the way that we could better control it? Obviously, there's been a change in strategy when it comes to masks, especially from the president of the United States, being more willing to say to people they should wear masks when they can't be socially distant from each other. But what would your recommendation be about how to better control this virus?
As you were saying, we need to start with the basics. Universal masking when people are in public places, social distancing at an individual level, not being close to people without a mask who are outside your family, and avoiding large gatherings. But in places where the disease is really accelerating around the country, we're going to obviously need to do more than that. And I think reclosure of some of the higher risk activities is going to be important. So reclosure of bars and large indoor restaurants and religious facilities where lots of people are close together, those are going to be important control measures. Hopefully that will be enough in many places, but in places that have already done those things and the disease is still accelerating, then I think those places are going to need to consider going back to the measures that worked in March, temporary stay at home until things get under better control in their communities.
Is there a way to keep one state with a bad outbreak from reinfecting another aside from banning interstate travel? And do you think that's something that we should be talking about?
I don't think banning interstate travel is a good approach for the country because too much of what we do requires movement around the country. And that's the movement of goods and services and people taking care of their families and being needing to be able to move to someplace when someone gets sick or there's another kind of family reason for that. So I don't think that's worth it. But I do think that states now have a clear interest in if you are coming from a state where there's been lots of disease, then having a very low threshold for getting tested when you're coming into a state that has very little disease. I think those things are going to be worked out state by state, but I don't think we should stop movement around the country. I think all states should be acting in the same way, which is we need to reduce social interaction to a lower level so we can get control of this in the ways that other countries in the world have been doing.
Let's talk about testing, because across the country, many people are waiting more than a week to get their test results. Why is it taking so long still for people to get the results of their tests?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that's happened in the last month is that because of the surge in disease in many states around the country, the testing has also gone way up. And so the pressure on laboratories has gone up, and there now become shortages in the reagents that are used and the swabs that are used. But overall, there's a variety of reasons that are contributing to these testing delays. Some of them is just backlog. Some of them are shortages. Some of it is the time between a test is done and mailed out to a lab somewhere else in the country that might be in the middle of another hotspot. But we absolutely have to get the time down. 2 days is really the most we should have in terms of the time between a test is done and the result is given back to the patient and the public health department.
Well, there's another issue with testing I want to ask you about, because last week we spoke with a woman in Georgia who talked about her experience with COVID-19. She had a known exposure and symptoms, But when she and a coworker took two tests, one at LabCorp and one self-administered test at CVS, they came back negative. Let's listen.
And then we ended up testing again that next week. Her symptoms increased. And by the way, she didn't quarantine because she got a negative test result. Mm-hmm. But I did quarantine because I knew what I was feeling.
And it came back positive.
Yeah. And that's where the positive test results came from.
So that's concerning. Do we know how long it takes after infection, even after symptoms, for the test to reflect that somebody is positive?
It depends on the person, unfortunately. We don't really have people vary. And within an individual, a test could be negative on day 1, 2, 3, 4, and then positive on day 5. So there's no standard universal number when the test becomes positive. It could become positive anytime between 0 and 14 days.
So how do you deal with that, though? Because then you'd have a lot of people walking around saying, oh, well, I don't have it, but they actually do, and they're spreading it.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, that is a limitation of the test. It's not a perfect test. It only tells you that you are negative that day. And we know that there also are false positives and false negatives for these tests. But they're the best that we have. If people continue to feel unwell and their doctor thinks that they have it, or they believe they have been exposed or think they may have COVID, then they should go back and get a second test.
Let me ask you, do you think that it is at this point relatively safe to be outside as opposed to inside? A lot of people are dining outside and maybe they're distanced from the next table over, but they're still dining outside without a mask on at the table. Is that safe?
It is far safer to be outside than to be inside in a restaurant. It's not possible to say something is completely safe. There are circumstances where you could have a transmission in an outdoor location, but we know from the studies that have gone on so far that outdoor transmission is much less likely than indoor transmission. Ventilation helps. The fact that you're not in a closed space where the air is not moving, those are all risks. So the fact that you're outside, ventilation is there, decreases the risk substantially. But unfortunately, like a lot of things with COVID, we can't say it's completely safe. It's just much safer.
And what about touching surfaces? I have to say, I don't worry that much anymore about a package coming from UPS or FedEx that's going to transmit coronavirus to me.
Yeah, I think it's still important to have really good hand hygiene. And for high touch surfaces, they should be cleaned in buildings or in places where people are interacting. But there hasn't been a lot of evidence that people have been catching this disease by touching packages or things that come into their house. We do believe touching surfaces that are contaminated is a potential means of transmission, but it's far, far, far less important than respiratory transmission at close range.
We saw Dr. Birx, a key member of the coronavirus task force, say that it's not clear, still an open question, how much children under 10 will spread the illness. Obviously, this is a big worry because of schools, which are about to reopen in some places. What do you think about that, about whether kids are going to transmit it to the others and to adults?
We don't have as much evidence as we need to make these really high consequence decisions. I think all the things that schools are doing to try and mitigate the risk with masks and distancing and avoiding large assemblies and where possible cohorting kids into smaller groups, those are all going to be really important to try and lower the risk for schools that do open.
Do you think that it is likely there will be a vaccine this year?
I think it is possible that there will be a safe and effective vaccine developed this year, perhaps more than one. But I also think that there are many ways that that will not happen. It all depends on the outcomes of a number of studies that are coming up over the summer and in the fall. But I think it's possible or possible early in 2021. And it'll be really important at that point to scale up the manufacture of this vaccine, because just because we have a vaccine doesn't mean we're going to be able to get it to people. That's going to require a whole lot of work to manufacture it at large scale so that we can begin to move it to people who need it the most.
That is Dr. Tom Inglesby, the director of the Center for Health Security at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Dr. Inglesby, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Jeremy.